Welcome to Whiskey Shenanigans. I'm your host, Randy Warren. Whiskey Shenanigans, where we help our listeners experience the world of whiskey, every aspect of life, as if it was accompanied by a glass of bourbon. The sports world on whiskey. Basically every part of life on whiskey. Whiskey Shenanigans is about getting exclusive interviews from Bourbon Row in Kentucky, where we can learn about the secrets that make our favorite bourbons unique. We will get inside the hearts and minds of many distillers and help you understand what and how they are achieving it. Whiskey Shenanigans is about going beyond boring podcasts featuring just tastings. Heck, what do you get out of that anyway? It's about bringing on guests and experiencing the entire world through whiskey. But be warned, if you're diving in and you want to participate in these riveting discussions, you will need to grab a glass or a dram and be prepared to be entertained. Hello again, Whiskey Shenanigans fans. I am here today with Amit and Marcin, and they are the founders of Mission Craft Cocktails. And we're going to learn a little bit about their journey, which has been quite exciting. And we're really excited to have you guys on today.
Thank you for having us.
We really appreciate it.
Fantastic. And, you know, I was talking to you, Amit, before, and I was like, wow, this is an amazing story that you guys have gone through. When did it start?
So the initial start happened in 2020, but Amit and I had met years before that.
No, but the
go ahead.
I started
9 years before 2020.
Yeah, so let me take a step back and you could add it to Randy, right?
Yes,
okay, amazing. Excellent. So, we'll tell you the original story. So, Amit and I had met at a local charity event, Food Drive. We didn't officially meet at the event, it wasn't until a week after. I saw him walking his dog. I was walking my dog. We realized we're at the same event and lived a block away from each other. So those dog walks were dogs with cocktails. We became friends fairly quickly just based on humble upbringings, morals, family, outlook at life. You know, we joke today that Amit had a 15-year-old daughter at the time that gave me all this amazingly fatherly advice as my wife and I were trying to get pregnant. And now after having two kids, I say none of that advice is valid. So that's the running joke. But everything we did always revolved around cocktails. We love speakeasies, you know, restaurants, food and cocktails was really a love language and how we became so close. And when COVID happened, we had to learn how to make our own drinks. We sucked at making the drinks. We followed YouTube recipes to the T. We bought all the Whole Foods ingredients. Our wives hated the mess that we made. So we still love cocktails and we knew we suck at it. And that wasn't an option. So this is like the first time that we got into the canned cocktails, the bottle cocktails. And, you know, during COVID, we were buying things all around the U.S., small suppliers, big suppliers. And we probably tried over 50 different ready-to-drink cocktails. And wow. All of them tasted, you know, artificial, kind of tastes like pine sol, didn't taste like a real fresh cocktail. And a lot of bad decisions are made at 1 in the morning. But we like to say 50% bravado, 50% we were naive, and 50% we were really drunk. You know, we looked at each other in disappointment and said, wow, none of these taste like real cocktails. We should just get into the business. And keep in mind, Randy, we have zero experience. We're just on this drunken bravado moment that we said we should just figure out the business. Yeah. So we
love that. We should just fix it. Let's just fix it. There's got to be a way.
And it's got to be that easy, right? Yeah. 1 in the morning after a lot of drinks, everything seems really, really easy. Yeah, we did kind of shake off the hangover the next morning. And, you know, when you do sober up a little bit, you start asking yourselves questions. And the question we asked, not coming from the space and not knowing how difficult it was, wasn't necessarily about that part of the business. It was really about the why, right? And COVID was in full swing. Food inflation at the time was through the roof. So, you know, the world generally was really hurting. And we said, why don't we really take our passion for cocktails? Because clearly we're passionate about cocktails and drink culture and our purpose for giving back. And we met at a charity event, which was obviously a food drive, you know, and food insecurity was crazy. It continues to be, you know, such a problem in the country today, now even 5 years later. And we said, let's make a mission-driven company. So every bottle that we sell, we fund another meal to food insecurity.
And we do that through one of the largest and best food insecurity companies, or I should say foundations around the world, which is Feeding America. So,
and you guys, according to your website, you have already contributed 1,788 meals funded.
We were proud to announce we hit over 1 million meals. You know, the adage of don't believe everything you read on the internet is somewhat true, because we literally were supposed to update it this week for the last quarter. So that will definitely be growing by a couple hundred thousand. So we're well on our way at that 1.2 million meals funded in 3 years now at retail. So we're super proud of that. It is how we measure our business, truthfully, is how many meals we funded. And accountants and our CPAs and everyone hate us because we never, you know, never really manage our business from a P&L or profitability standpoint. It was all about how do we fund the most meals possible.
Yeah. And then also, wow, Randy,
really great.
Give you perspective, right? As a self-funding company, one that we had zero experience, you know, in those 3 years, we donated $250,000 of hard cash to Food Bakes. So something that me and Amit thought would take us 10 plus years to hit 1 million meals and to be able to write those kind of checks. And it's the best checks we've ever wrote from day one when you're negative. In the negative, right?
Yeah,
we put smiles on our face writing those checks while building the business.
Yeah,
and right. So how did the business how did it take off? How did you solve this huge problem, which, you know, other than you guys, is still a problem out there?
Yeah, I think how do we solve the problem? When we first started, when we said we're going to do this, after we decided, hey, let's create a perpetual giving machine and then name it Mission Grab Cocktails, it was going on Google. As embarrassing as this sounds, now that we have a little bit of experience in the space, is what factories make alcohol, right? What factories can make mixed drinks? So really just started off on Google. And then once we found, you know, 30 different distilleries, you know, me and Amit are not shy, picking up the phone, calling, trying to talk to the owners, and kind of trying to first find a factory, which obviously is a distillery, that's going to really just take up on a project of two drunk guys that wanted to get into a business, which they've seen this happen, you know, 1 million times. So that was the difficult part. But also just Googling, hey, what licenses do you need in the state of California? Like, yeah. What do you do to distribute? Like, we knew nothing, right? We had zero experience and I just didn't want to
wait. I think that's also the key, has been the key to our success, is not being from the industry, mm-hmm. right? And it took us, you know, we've been in business for 5 years. We've only been on retail shelves for three. Mm-hmm. It's 2 years of, you know, not only R&D of how do we take delicious cocktails that, you know, that are in a shaker and then commercialize them and come up with these great drinks. It was also the, you know, it's something no one's ever done before, because if we were from the space, we would take water and flavor and color and do what everyone else had done in the past. And our secret has always been our cocktails taste exactly like they do out of a shaker in that bottle. So pour it over ice or put them in a shaker, shake it with ice, put it in a beautiful cocktail glass. And I would say 9.5 out of 10 people would not be able to tell you our drinks are from a bottle and not from behind a bar. Like our bar blind taste test results are extraordinary.
Wow. And how do you produce that and distribute it so that when it goes to, you know, the shelf,
yep.
and it sits there for a while, it still tastes good.
So two different problems there. One's the producing problem, and then one's the distribution problem. I'll speak to the production problem, and I'll let Marston talk about how we got it on shelf and what our plans were. But it really was a lot, and this is, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. The hardest part of the job was the R&D.
Yeah.
We love...
Tell our wives the R&D part is the hardest.
Yeah, we...
It's also the most fun part,
right? And it's the funnest part of the job, like, is coming up with cocktails and then but figure out the process. So we had a lot of visits at our distillery. We'd spend the weekend, you know, at that point we were, you know, we had full-time jobs and this was a sub to side hustle, and we literally had to figure out filter types, you know, the temperature at which we needed to filter certain juices to get the best results. You'd let it sit there, you'd then, you know, you'd add your flavor, your ingredients, add flavor to it, and then you let it sit you taste it, then you have to let it sit overnight and see how the shelf stability was and if there was settling, and then we'd have to do it again and again. So it was a lot of fun because it was a bit of like, you know, adults in a chemistry, with a chemistry set, but you were making cocktails at the same time.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
And how did you handle the distribution problem?
Yeah, the distribution is the fun one. So Ahmed and I, you know, not coming from the space and just researching, reading articles about, you know, the beer and spirits world, like, we don't need a distributor. We could just get a Sprinter van. Let's wrap the van. And in the future, let's get 50 of them and full-time drivers. And we just don't need a distributor. So in the beginning, we obviously were going hand-to-hand, right, to the stores and hand-delivering it. And then as we got a little bit bigger and a little bit of traction, then we started getting interest from some of the grocery channels. And they said, your product's fantastic. Your success, like, in this little market is clearly doing well in the stores that you're sharing with us. But here are six distributors that we work with. And if you're not part of the six, sorry, come back when you do have that. So really early on, I mean, it was over a year and a half that we were self-distributing, packaging, you know, the cases. We then found that there's a thing called Park Street, which was new to us as well, that they could do the deliveries without being a distributor. But we knew that we had so much interest on the grocery side and a couple other bigger retail stores that we need to find a distributor. So we're so proud and honored and grateful that we are part of Reyes Beverage Group in California, Hawaii, and Illinois. But hey, in the beginning, it was us doing it by hand and Park Street, and then with Reyes.
Yeah.
And did you guys put your stuff up for some awards or anything like that?
Yeah, that was, you know, when we first started, we did our first batch of cocktails, and I can't remember exactly the number, but I think it was like 100 cases of our first, each of our first five flavors. So 500 cases, which was a huge investment for us. You know, we cracked them open with our families and friends, and everyone's like, wow, these are fantastic. And we didn't want to believe our own BS because they're our family. So what else are they going to tell us? Right. Your drinks suck. Most of them won't be that honest. So we sent it out to a ton of different award competitions. And the biggest one, truthfully, being the San Francisco International Wine and Spirits Comp, caused, you know, pretty much the Olympics of drinking competitions or spirits competitions. And, you know, we got back, our first result was a double gold for our Mai Tai, and that was like up for a best in class. Mm-hmm. So we instantly got an industry recognition that what we were doing and what we created was actually something special.
That's amazing. So from there, how did you get it out the door then? So yeah, now you've got some industry backing and everybody's liking what you've got.
Yep.
You know, you got some local distribution. Well, not totally local. You got California, Hawaii. And
in the beginning, it was just Orange County.
It was just Orange County. And then we expanded, you know, through all of California with Reyes group, and then Hawaii, and most recently Illinois. But, you know, Total Wine, Total Wine and More around the country, they tried our drinks actually at the San Francisco International Wine and Spirits Competition. And they approached us and said, hey, guys, you know what? We think the product that you guys have created, the products are so special. We'd love to figure out how we carry you nationwide. So they called to us. It was their vice president of spirits, their director of spirits, like the CMO, all approached us and said, you know, the RTD category or the ready to serve category is exploding, especially in the spirit based, you know, real cocktail space, not the stuff in a can. And we'd love to support you. We think you've got such a demonstrably different product than anything else is on the shelf. How do we do that? So we ended up going nationwide with Total Wine about this time last year. So spring of 2025, and then that put us into 29 other states on top of the three with Reyes. So we're, you know, nationwide in all Total Wine stores, which has been phenomenal exposure for us.
Yeah. And Total Wine and you're the brother started it, Randy, has been incredibly philanthropic throughout the entire business start. So since they've just started, they've donated over $300 million to various causes. And I think just last year alone, $15 million. So not only was it the liquid, the category, but also our mission had really resonated with the entire team, whether executive or in store. which has really been special, right, for us to be able to make that huge impact with the support of going nationwide with a partner like Total Wine.
Yeah.
That's amazing. What a great story. So they come to you and they're like, hey, this stuff is great. We got to get this out the door.
And if anyone, you know, again, not coming from the space, we probably didn't even realize or recognize how special of an opportunity they were giving us. Because, again, we're not from this business. But I think now looking back going, wow, I don't even know why we second guessed it. Because we literally, you know, we second guessed our relationship with Reyes when they kind of approached us. And we're like, maybe they're just too big for us, right? And at the time, they probably were, but they were making a large push into the spirit side. Traditionally, they're a beer distributor, and now they purchased a lot of distribution in other states on the spirit side. And we look back and go, wow, we're so lucky and so blessed that we got in with them when we did, and we get in the, you know, an inordinate amount of attention because we were one of their first, you know, spirits focused brands that they brought on. So now, you know, hey, they've got Brown-Forman and they've got, you know, Gallo's portfolio and Sazerac and everyone else. But we were one of the first on the spirit side to really come on board. That's helped us immeasurably.
That's amazing. That's totally amazing. What speaking of those distillers, what bourbons do you use in your old fashioned?
Yeah. So, I'll let Marcin talk to the old fashioned only because we have a Manhattan as well, which is my favorite drink. So if I don't talk about the Manhattan, I know he's not going to.
Yeah, we'll just put it to the side.
We're going to the Manhattan first.
So we'll give it a spotlight.
The Manhattan is my favorite drink. It's a rye based Manhattan. We get a semi sweet vermouth produced out of California that we love, and it's very herbaceous. Real Angostura bitters in there as well. It's an aged rye that we actually partner with also our bourbon supplier, which is Bardstown.
Bardstown. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so they've been.
I was just today. I was on the podcast doing a podcast with Steve Nally, the master distiller at Bardstown, just 2 hours.
Well, there you go. You probably have more about Bardstown after that call than we do. But, you know, they are just an incredible organization making fantastic juice on all sides. So we feel blessed to have that exclusive now relationship with them. And Marcin, I'll let you talk through with the old fashioned.
You don't want to go keep going to the Manhattan? Manhattan needs all the love. Our old fashioned's a 3-year Kentucky straight bourbon. We infuse it with California oranges for 48 hours to give like that nice orange zest, real Angostura bitters, and just a little bit of turbinado. And that one sits at 40% ABV. So take out your big rock, pour it over ice, and you wouldn't even know you didn't receive this from a speakeasy.
That's incredible. I mean, and it holds up on the shelf. That's how do you pull that off?
Again, that would be the million-dollar mystery question secret that we can't give away on a lot of the stuff. But it really has to do with, you know, we started with 5 drinks and we took 2 years to develop the process around those 5. Then we launched another, you know, 2 about 6 months to a year later. And now we've got another 5 we're launching. So for us, you know, it took a lot of time to develop the first ones. And then once you figure out the formula, you know, our innovation has really been starting to creep up, and we've got, I think in fall, we've got a pecan cherry old fashioned, that we're launching, that we're super excited about as well. So by the end of this year, we'll have close to 15 drinks in the lineup.
Yeah. And Randy, those 2 additional drinks was a jalapeno pineapple margarita. That one double go 2 times last 2 years with San Francisco Wine Spirits and Espresso Martini. That our Espresso Martini is so delicious. They put in a shaker with ice and you shake it up. You get a beautiful foam crema that you can ice skin on, which is really the magic in our bottle. And that one won double gold as well. So we're excited about the new innovation and seeing what the industry thinks. So me and Amit all have made our drinks for our palates, which I think is something unique from, you know, most companies that, hey, there's a tasting group, that there's an entire team that developing these drinks. For me and Amit, it's spending weekends away and kind of going back, Randy. So when we were doing the R&D, my son was just born. So if you could just imagine of like, hey, 4 days, 3 days out for the weekend, right? Multiple times during the week in those 2 years, definitely wasn't easy, but it was definitely worth it.
how did you, or when did you guys know that you had something special and you needed to quit your jobs and do this full time?
You know what? I think we've been delusional and believed that we've had something special the whole time. Really, truthfully.
From that one drunk night.
Yeah, from that one drunk night. I don't think we've ever varied from our delusional belief. But I think the business warranted and could afford us to kind of, you know, quit jobs about a year ago. Really, when we launched nationwide with Total Wine, I think it's probably the aha moment. We're like, okay, we're going to get, you know, across the country exposure and growth, and that's, you know, 12 months ago. So is when we really believed we had a sustainable business.
Yeah, and I think when we look at how much time was involved in our hyper growth, so we went from, you know, to be able to backtrack in 2023 in our first, you know, kind of year figuring it out, not knowing what we're doing and just trying to sell a few cases here and there. We sold about 1,000 cases of 12 bottles per case. And then our second year in 2024, we did a little over 2,000 cases. And then last year in 2025, we ended up about 82,000 cases. So being able to have hyper growth of, hey, the sourcing of all ingredients, the spirits, the bottles, the corks, the storage, the R&D still trying to bring new innovation in the future years and keeping up with the supply. Me and I'm always look at each other. We are so proud to say we've never missed a PO. We've never been late on a PO.
Yeah.
And somehow we figured that out, which is, you know, looking back, insanity and some of those days, weeks, and sleepless nights. But definitely excited for this year, which we are on pace to do 200,000 cases, which is still kind of crazy to think about, Randy. You know, two guys that were just two idiots that believed in themselves and kind of, you know, been able to build this into something special.
Yeah. It took us 3 million meals, and we're hoping to get to 2 million in one, and like in this year alone. So for us, our growth's been phenomenal in the last 24 months.
Did you guys self fund that expansion, or did you go on Shark Tank or something?
Everyone, you know, a couple things. Everyone says we should go on Shark Tank because we're so passionate about what we do. We'll gladly say we are self funded 100%. It's just, you know, Marcin and myself. And, you know, a lot of people said, hey, why didn't you get funding? Why didn't you go for friends and family? And it's not because we didn't need their money, exact opposite, truthfully. But this is one of the riskiest businesses in the world. And with a 98% failure rate after, you know, after 12 to 24 months. So in good conscience, we could not take our, you know, friends and family's money, knowing there's only a 2% success of this. And it's our dream, not their dream, right? This has been our dream. So we figured we have to fund it. We wanted to make sure we go to Thanksgiving dinners and Christmas dinners and birthdays and not get yelled at because we lost someone money.
Yeah.
Right. Right. That's amazing. That's really cool. I like that. Self-funded gives you control, gives you the ability to, you know, to expand it and grow it, hyperscale it, whatever you want to call it, as fast as you can or want to, and as long as you can still control the quality.
Yep,
that's the key.
Yeah, and when we, when we look at, hey, if we did that, Bunny, I think we'll make the decisions a lot differently.
Yeah,
versus when we are self-funding, we make very expensive decisions. But I think a superpower me and I'm ahead. We could just move on and say that didn't work.
Yeah,
let's keep going. And make bad decisions and make good decisions, right? With anyone's approval, and we can move at the speed of light.
Yeah.
And we look back at people would say, how did you prepare yourself to have the level of scale to be able to grow that amount? Because just on bottles, course, labels, like production, like it seems impossible. Me and Amit always said, like from day one, our risk tolerance has been always the same and it's very, very high. So when we were supposed to buy 10,000 bottles, you know, in our early runs, we were buying 50,000 bottles to get that extra tiered up savings.
Yeah, there's a scale there, yep, for sure.
And then we were supposed to buy 50,000 bottles. You're buying 250,000 bottles, right, to fill an entire container. So we've always overextended ourselves and even buying bourbon barrels, right? We started with buying 2-4 barrels and then we're like, okay, looking in the next 12 months, if, yeah, we got to buy 50 barrels and let them sit and age. And now we're in the business of buying, you know, new builds to look at in the future, right? Outside of age barrels.
So Randy, when we started this, I remember we bought our first 2 barrels and it was the scariest moment ever.
Yep.
And our risk tolerance is such, and we're like, well,
if this thing doesn't work out, you get a barrel at your house and I have a barrel at my house. So we generally will always think that, okay, that's the worst that's going to happen.
Yes.
And then when it got to the point where we're buying, 50 and 100 barrels at a time, I'm like, okay, neither one of us have a garage this week anymore. So we need to make it work. But as Marcin said, like, our risk tolerance is super high. So we've always said, just because we produce it for X and we need to sell it at Y, the retail price would be too high where the consumer's not there. And we said, for us to really grow this, we've got to be at, $12.99 or whatever that price is. It was almost irrelevant. And this is, again, we had no investors aside from ourselves. So we can make a lot of risky, bad decisions and go, we're going to sell it at this price and lose money for the first couple of years until we figure it out. But let's just go chase it and figure it out. So we bought enough volume of bottles and everything else to get us there before we had any orders or any reason to do it. Or any rights to do it, for sure.
Yeah, and with the Total Wine too, Randy, with the Nationwide, it just became such great timing as Reyes was a couple months after we're onboarding. Finally, all those grocery chains that we've been talking to the last 2 years, begging to get on their shelves, where they had those relations, so they were ready. So it was, the Whole Foods, the Bristol, the Gelson's, the Total Wine Nationwide, the Northgate, Cardenas, like all these retailers kind of all happened all last year. So it was not only the Nationwide rollout with Total Wine, it's now all these chains are coming on board and bringing in 5 SKUs plus, right? So
yeah,
it was a little bit of a crazy on management, but it was fun when looking back at it.
Yeah, that hyperscale growth can be really challenging to keep up with.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of cocktails were definitely drank during a lot of weeks.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Did you buy like a production facility or did you build one?
So that's a great question. So we, when we started it, none of the kind of co-packers and distillers that we told this idea to, right? Of, hey, we want to create real cocktails with real juice and authentic spirits. And we want for a Mai Tai, a handmade almond orgeat, and we want cracked peppercorn. And they all looked at us like, it doesn't work that way, guys. You can't do it. But we did find one co-packer that was crazy enough that believed in us. And they said, guys, you have a real uphill battle, but I love your passion. Let's do something together. And we'll try to figure it out. And they spent that 2 years of R&D working with us. So by last year, our production had really outgrown them. We were producing too quickly. They were a small facility. And they're like, okay. We had plenty of options, and a lot of that point, a lot of offers like, hey guys, we can save you X, come bottle with us, right? We can save you Y, because you get that. Now everyone sees our success and wanted a piece of that business. And our approach, again, was opposite, because we didn't have the accountability to anyone but ourselves and our conscience. And we said, these are the guys that brought us to the party. So how do we increase their capacity? So we helped them, to buy an incredible new bottling machine, expand their capacity. So we grew with our partners, even though it cost us money. But again, if you're not living your life by a balance sheet or a spreadsheet and just doing it surely on growing your bottle count to fund more meals, it was a no-brainer for us. It wasn't about profitability. It was about, he helped us get here. He's growing with us if he wants it or not.
Oh, yeah, I get nice. Yeah, at this point.
Yeah. And now, now they went from a small little facility to, I would say, pretty close to being an incredible bottler that could handle massive quantities because of our business and us helping them get there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's unbelievable. I mean, and you're right. I mean, the risk tolerance of all of that is just off the charts. It's just crazy amount of risk to jump into that and to make those decisions. What you're basically saying is, all along the way, in order to get the price down, you had to overbuy bottle, overbuy labels, overbuy whiskey, overbuy everything to get the price down to the point where you could make the part that you wanted. Yeah. And now you got all these extra bottles.
Yeah.
You got to have faith. You're going to fill them up.
Yep. And it was also storage. So storage becomes a real issue when you have 50 pallets of just sitting there, right?
Yeah.
For 3 months, 6 months, a year, who knows how long, right? If we didn't have the growth.
Yeah. But I think that also helped us because, we didn't have any logistics or supply shortages, right? That a lot of other people had, at any conflict or, you know, that upset shipping lines, because we already had it. We already, you know, we built it. It's sitting in our warehouse. We just pull from it. So where a lot of our competition, you know, had issues on the supply chain side, we're already sitting on everything we need. It's just about throughputting on the bottling machine. So I think that's also what helped us, you know, have 100% on-time delivery with the rate with all of our customers. And I hate to say it again, but we're doing the same thing once again, right? So now we're really competing at our level at 82,000 cases going to 200,000. You know, the behemoth in the category is a company called On the Rocks. So they're owned by Beam Suntory, who I'm sure you're very familiar with. And, you know, we're definitely need to be at their retail to try to, again, keep growing our business. So we're overbuying once again at the next stage of savings to kind of get us to that hyper-competitive retail.
Yeah, and they've been a huge inspiration, Randy, when we look at what they built. First pioneers into like the spirit-based bottle cocktail, the following and the consumer and the entire category that they built has been amazing to watch. So to me and Ahmed, I've always looked, hey, this is our competition, but also like an inspiration that got us into the business.
Absolutely.
Right? But as Ahmed says, the consumer is at a certain price point and you can only grow at a certain price point. So you have to sometimes make good decisions or bad decisions, but you have to meet the consumer where they're at.
Yep.
And does the have the business deals changed too? Like, for example, I noticed like Bullet has a old fashioned in a bottle all ready to go with their own alcohol and that they make themselves, right? Yeah. And so they're trying to push their product
100%
out the door. So I'm wondering, do they come to you and they say, well, you guys make it really good. Why don't we put the Bullet in your product? And then we can get it out the door that way.
Yeah, I'll flip the question a little bit. So when me and Ahmed first started this and having a little bit of traction, we said we absolutely need to reach out to the strategics, figure out how we do a licensing deal, get branded names. Because again, looking at On the Rocks as an inspiration, they do have branded on all of our drinks, right? When they first started, it wasn't that way. But after the Beam partnership, right, it made a lot of sense. So me and Ahmed had always felt that was always something that's going to hurt us as we grow. And then as we started building the business, being at so many events, talking to consumers and retailers and buyers and all of it, we then realized people are buying it for the quality of the bottle, not so much the specific brand name. So now we have a, you know, different outlook on it versus before. It's like
entirely,
we're missing this out completely. We would be so much far ahead if we had our branded name and we would, you know, be looking at begging big strategics to now say, hey, we created something that the consumer tries, believes, and already knows that this is a fantastic cocktail without questioning, you know, where's the bourbon coming from?
Yeah. And we would have to pay money for that, right? Yeah. So, hey, we reached out to a lot of bourbon suppliers and we're like, hey, we'd love to put branded bourbon, but it's going to cost you X. And, you know, now with Bardstown, we can take whatever, you know what, branded margin they were going to make and buy better quality bourbon. So we actually feel our product is so much better because we don't put or don't use a branded, you know, bourbon that they would retail, have a new retail brand name to it. So it really was we found a hole in the story and now we believe is such a strength for us.
And Bardstown, I mean, if you're going with a Hall of Fame master distiller there on Steve Nally.
Absolutely.
I mean, everything that guy touches turns to gold. So, you know, I mean, Bardstown is doing pretty well for a relatively, you know, 10-year-old or whatever distiller.
Yeah.
You know, they're 12-year-old distillers. They do it really well.
Yeah.
So, and they've got good product out there.
They do.
And same thing with our tequila. Like Ahmed and I were in Jalisco, Mexico in January, meeting with the third generation tequila maker, CEO, right? Spending a day. We've been buying tequila with bulk through them for some time. So we decided, hey, now we're getting to a next level phase that we want to sit down with the owner. We want to figure out our best strategy going forward and getting, you know, better pricing and terms and logistics, all of it, because we want to do that with all of the, you know, spirits that we have. Because we have 5 spirits, and as Ahmed said, by end of this year, we'll have 15 drinks. Yeah. Right now, actively, we have 12. So
Tell me about some of those, because that's, you know, listeners want to hear that too. I mean, yeah, that's just the fun stuff, right?
So we can start out with the fun margarita side. So we have a classic Cadillac margarita at 25% ABV. And all of our drinks have a little slight twist to us. So like for us, we use additive-free tequila. We use agave. We make a handmade orange liqueur. Each 375 ml bottle has equivalents of 6 limes. So you get that freshness and that authentic margarita. Our second one that we released over a year ago is the jalapeno pineapple margarita. Same base, right? We just infused with jalapenos as well as our real pineapple. And then we just launched a strawberry margarita, a watermelon margarita, and a tamarind margarita that tastes like the perfect Mexican candy cocktail, all at 25% ABV. So those are all of our margaritas. We then have a cosmopolitan. Again, most people would say, hey, just a Cosmo, but we have hints of peppercorn and rosemary, handmade orange liqueur, right? We still use real cranberry juice. That's why it's beautiful and pink. We have an incredible Mai Tai. And again, this is another 25% ABV. So these are all full bar strength. Our espresso martini, old fashioned, Manhattan, a lemon drop martini, as well as a blue Hawaiian. And there's a couple of fun limited time offers that you'll see throughout this year that we can't share yet publicly, but we'll announce them shortly.
But we did share the pecan cherry old fashioned.
Hey, you weren't supposed to share a secret. I know, but
what is coming up to you for
Randy something?
Yeah, we definitely got to speak whiskey on Shenanigans. Yeah.
Right. That'd be great. That'd be great. So, man, that's fantastic. What a story. You guys are like on the road, man. I mean, this is really happening, and it's happening very, very quickly.
Yeah. And people always say like, hey, how has your friendship become like after becoming business partners in this crazy business that you guys are building, and being best friends before the business? Now we're more so like brothers, and it's always hard to tell people how we operate because I'm a little block away from me. His daughter watches my kids at times. Our family's vacations together. We start text message trails at 5 a.m. or doing a gym session at 5 a.m. till midnight, right? So there's a million decisions being made throughout the day, which is, I think, unique to any one I know.
Incredibly unique. And I also will give credit, you know, to our wives. Because if they didn't get along and they didn't believe in what we were doing as well, I don't think what we could do would be even possible. Truthfully, like they, hey, you guys, go out, do what you got to do. You know, they know we're not doing anything but hanging out and working on our passion. And they got that trust in us and in our crazy obsession. So absolute kudos to our wives, because if they weren't supportive, I don't think we would have gotten past year two.
Yeah. And in the beginning, Randy, they thought it was like bromance. Like they just want to get away to go speakeasy, try new drinks, go to restaurants. Right. Which of course they thought and probably were right in the beginning, and then realized, oh, wow. You know, once I think they've seen the impact that they're making in the food banks to like, wow, you guys are actually building something that is making an impact. And then every quarter, that number goes higher and higher, right? Of how many meals you funded. So
I think it became real to them too when they started coming to the food bank events with us,
yeah,
and saw the impact that we were doing. And, you know, oddly enough, like the food bank directors looking at Marcin and me and say, you know, guys, thank you so much. You guys are doing more than Fortune 500 companies. It's, you know, it's incredible. And our wives now looking going, oh, I guess they weren't out there just drinking and taste testing. They were really making an impact. And I think from that point on, they really have been so you know, full force behind us.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. What a story. Oh my gosh.
And for I'm so it's much easier because his daughter's 22 and mine's 3 and 5. So you can imagine like when my daughter was born, the second one, we launched to market. So we have a 2-year-old at home, a newborn, and we're out trying to pitch liquor stores that you shouldn't walk past 7 p.m. begging him to be on shelf.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible. What a story. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on today, coming on Whiskey Shenanigans. I'm really glad that we're able to share this story with our listeners. We're a top 10 global podcast, top 10% global podcast now, and it's only our first year. And we're hoping that in year 2 or 3, we're going to have your kind of explosive growth. Okay.
Well, we really appreciate that, obviously, the time to let us share our story and our journey. If your listeners want to follow us on Instagram at Mission Cocktails,
or missioncocktails.com to purchase directly and read a bit more about our story. We update that meal counter every quarter so they can keep track on our progress as well.
And I'm on the East Coast, so Total Wine means a lot around here. I'm in Charlotte today. I live in Charlotte during the summer and down in Naples during the winter. So it's all like Total Wine or ABC stores and all that kind of stuff. So it's on the shelf at Total Wine, so can pick one up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Randy. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, Randy. Bye.
All right. Whiskey Shenanigans fans, welcome to another shenanigans portion of this episode. So, we're delving into some stuff that I'm certainly not an expert at, but is really interesting. It's taken quite a bit of learning and research to come up with some of this stuff, but I think it's pretty interesting. And today we're going to attack the topic or broach the topic of whiskey steak pairings. And we're not creating a definitive guide for whiskey and steak, but this is more about, or I should say less about rigid rules and more about understanding how fat, heat, and oak interact on the palate. Steak brings the protein, of course, the char, varying degrees of marbling for different kinds of steaks. Whiskey brings the ethanol, the wood extraction, and a spectrum of sweetness and spiciness. When those elements are aligned, the experience becomes layered rather than just sequential, and each bite and sip reshapes the next. The idea that higher proof bourbons complement heavily marbled cuts is not just a preference, it's grounded in how alcohol behaves. And while I'm no chemical engineer, it probably doesn't require that level of expertise to understand the intricacies of this pairing. Ethanol dissolves and lifts the fat, effectively clearing the palate. A richly marbled ribeye or wagyu cut saturates the mouth with the lipids that can dull flavor perception. A cask-strength bourbon, dense with caramelized sugars, vanilla, and char, can cut through the saturation, reintroducing clarity while simultaneously echoing the steak's seared crust. What would otherwise feel hot and aggressive in the whiskey becomes rounded and integrated and buffered by the fat. Ribeye sits at the center of this whole philosophy. Its abundant marbling and deeply rendered fat demand a whiskey with structure and intensity. Some high-proof bourbon, particularly those with pronounced oak profile or a high rye mash bill, creates a compelling tension between the whiskey and the meat. The sweetness from the barrel contrasts with the savory density of the steak, while the spice component, the black pepper, the clove, sometimes even a little cinnamon, mirrors the char exterior of the steak. The result is not so subtle. It's more of a deliberate collision of richness that force the and it kind of boils down or resolves into a balance, which is really nice. New York Strip moves the pairing in a slightly different direction. Less marbling, a little bit more firm, more mineral-driven bite. It benefits from whiskey that emphasizes structure over sweetness. A rye whiskey becomes perfectly effective here. It's herbal, it's pepper forward, its profile aligns with the steak's tighter grain and pronounced chew, enhancing rather than overwhelming the steak. Where bourbon leans into the sweetness and the roundness, the rye sharpens the edges, creating a more linear, focused pairing that tracks the steak's natural character. Great combination there. Filet mignon now is different. It's a steak that's going to require some bourbon restraint. The appeal of it lies in tenderness and delicacy, not intensity. And that shifts the pairing strategically quite a bit. A softer bourbon, often maybe a wheated bourbon, lower in proof, less dominated by aggressive oak. That would be a good choice for filet mignon. The goal is to preserve the filet's subtlety, allowing the gentle vanilla and the light caramel and the creamy mouthfeel from the whiskey to act as an extension of the meat's texture rather than competing with it. Overproof or heavily oaked expressions would flatten the filet, erasing the very qualities that make the filet, what we desire. Wagyu, particularly in its more extreme expressions, presents another kind of challenge. The fat content is so high and the melting point so low that it coats the palate. Here you can either counterbalance or harmonize. Two completely different directions. A high-proof bourbon creates a stark contrast, slicing through the richness and preventing palate fatigue. Alternatively, a more precise, balanced whiskey, such as a refined Japanese style, can mirror the elegance of the meat, creating a seamless, almost textural pairing where nothing is a problem here. Nothing stands out and sticks out of place. Both approaches work, but they produce entirely different results. One is tension-driven, the other is continuity-driven. So harmony or disharmony. Incorporating whiskey directly into the steak through compound butter sauces is a very effective way to unify the pairing. As the butter melts, it carries the whiskey's volatile aromatics into the meat, binding the fat, the salt, and the spirit into a single medium. With a ribeye, a robust bourbon folded into the butter with roasted garlic, black pepper, maybe a hint of maple, creates a glaze that reinforces the steak's inherent richness. For a strip, a rye-based butter with thyme, shallots, maybe a touch of citrus zest, introduces bright and herbal lift. Filet responds better to restraint, of course. The wheated bourbon with chives, lightly enriched and an almost creamy base to a sauce. Wagyu benefits from the precision. Brown butter blended with a small amount of whiskey and a umami component, such as a miso, can deepen the complexity without overwhelming the palate. The idea of bringing umami to the table, pun intended, allows us to go for the depth, richness, and persistence, the sensation that a food is full or meaty in flavor. It also has a compounding effect. When glutamates and nucleotides are present together, they amplify each other, which is why combinations like steak and mushrooms or beef and aged cheese feel especially satisfying. So nice choices there. Beyond butter, though, there's lots of other kinds of sauces you could do. Bourbon-based sauces open up an entire another layer of pairing possibilities, allowing you to engineer contrasts and complements directly on the palate. A classic bourbon peppercorn sauce built on a reduced pan fond with cracked pepper, shallots, cream, and a splash of bourbon works very well with strip steaks. The pepper ties into the rye or high rye bourbon profiles, while the cream softens the alcohol and integrates it into the meat's structure. A bourbon demi-glaze, more reduced, more concentrated, leans toward the ribeye, amplifying the steak's umami, there's that word again, it's a weird word, right? While introducing a subtle sweetness from the spirit that plays against the char. So for something more assertive, a bourbon barbecue glaze can be brushed onto thicker cuts or even reverse seared steaks. Here, the whiskey contributes caramelization and depth, especially when combined with the molasses, the vinegar, and spice. It's less about subtle pairing and more about building a layered, almost lacquered flavor profile. On the other end of the spectrum, a lighter bourbon pan sauce with mustard stock and a touch of honey can work with filet, adding dimension without overwhelming its delicacy. There's also a room to push into the more savory, less obvious territory here. Bourbon mushroom reduction, where the whiskey is used to deglaze the pan of deeply browned mushrooms before being reduced with stock, creates an intensely umami-forward sauce that pairs exceptionally well with both ribeye and wagyu. The earthiness of the mushrooms bridges the gap between the meat and the spirit, while the bourbon adds a subtle sweetness and an aromatic lift. What you're ultimately aiming here with all of this is an alignment across three different axes, three dimensions. The first dimension is contrast. Fat against alcohol, richness against spice. The second dimension is a complement. Caramel and vanilla of the oak echoing the steak's crust, the herbal notes of the rye reinforcing the seasoning. And the third dimension, or continuation, is the finish of the whiskey, extending the flavor of each bite so the experience lingers rather than resets. So the idea would be, once you get this sauce and once you get this steak and once you get the bourbon, you take a bite of the steak, you have a sip of the bourbon. You take a bite of the steak, you have a sip of the bourbon. And it's either complementing or it's reinforcing or it's continuing the finish. It's adding something to the experience of eating the steak. When all three of these dimensions can come into play, that's a good trick. The pairing stops feeling like two separate components and becomes almost a single evolving flavor system. It's just an amazing three-dimensional combination. And there you go. I have exceeded my knowledge in cooking and chemical engineering and sauces and reductions and umami. I have exceeded my knowledge through research. There you have it, Whiskey Shenanigan fans. Cook me up some steaks. Let's go. See you next time.
For the last, I think now 19 years, we've been bringing out Parker's Heritage Collection. That obviously is an homage to Parker Beam, the fourth master distiller and the guy who really put Heaven Hill on the map. And he had a reputation as an innovator, and that's why the Heritage Collection is always something innovative. And that's a very broadly phrased innovative. It could be a barrel finish. It could be a unique mash bill. It could be a blend of, you know, different ages, a blend of different mash bills. It could be a single maturation in a unique barrel. So from that point of view, I think Heaven Hill have been, you know, breaking the rules, breaking the laws, whatever you want to call it, but obviously staying true to our legacy.